Tracy Chevalier hails from Washington, D.C., but she's made England her home throughout her adulthood. Tracy received her BA in English from Oberlin College, Ohio, and her MA in creative writing from the University of East Anglia in Norwich, England. She lives in London with her English husband and son. Before turning to writing full-time, she was a reference book editor. She's written 7 novels. Her second novel, Girl with a Pearl Earring, sold 4 million copies worldwide and was made into a film starring Colin Firth and Scarlett Johansson. Today we'll speak with her about her new title, The Last Runaway. Welcome, Tracy. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Book Report.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Last Runaway is your first novel set in America in the 1850s. How did you select the Quakers and their participation in the Underground Railroad as your topic?
Well, when I was young, I went to a Quaker camp in Thurmont, Maryland, outside of Washington, about 70 miles west. And I grew up knowing about Quaker ideology and Quaker silence, and it really appealed to me, although I'm not a member of Quaker at the moment. I still go to meetings sometimes, and I had this feeling a few years ago more and more that the world has become a very noisy place. And one day I remember being on a street in Manhattan trying to talk to somebody on a cell phone, and I couldn't hear a thing. And everybody around me seemed to be able to do it no problem. And I thought, is it just me, or is this world too noisy? And it made me kind of run towards silence a bit. And the Quakers sit in silence for an hour every week at their form of church. And I like to do that, and I thought, wouldn't it be great to have a character who is quiet? And I thought, well, a Quaker would make sense. And in fact, when I had the idea for the book, I had just been to Oberlin College, which is my alma mater, and I happened to see Toni Morrison there unveiling a bench that is a memorial to slavery and the Underground Railroad that ran through Oberlin. And I put the two ideas together because I knew that Quakers had done a lot of work on the Underground Railroad. In fact, they were responsible, really, for the growth of abolitionism from about the 1830s onward. And I just thought it would be a great topic to write about.
Well, as a way to introduce your book, talk a little about your main characters, Honor Bright, Belle, Jack Haymaker, Donovan, my favorite, and Mrs. Reed.
Oh, everybody likes Donovan. You love to hate him and hate to love him.
He's a bad boy.
Yeah, he's a bad boy. My main character, Honor Bright, is a young English Quaker who emigrates to Ohio in 1850. She accompanies her sister, who is going to marry another Englishman who has emigrated. And for various circumstances, various reasons, Honor finds herself alone once she's in Ohio. And rather abandoned, because she had such a terrible crossing across the Atlantic that she knows she can never go back. She was too seasick. So she's stuck in Ohio, and she ends up meeting a bunch of different characters who are a range of personalities. I think my favorite character in the book is a woman named Belle Mills, who is a milliner. She makes hats. And she takes Honor in for a couple of days until Honor finally finds her way to her Quaker community. And Belle is exactly what you wouldn't expect a milliner to look like. You know, you'd think a milliner would be quite pretty and feminine, and Belle is none of those things, although she makes hats. She's quite plain. She's very plain-speaking, quite tough, uses a gun well, and drinks a lot of whiskey. And she also helps runaway slaves on the Underground Railroad escape up towards Canada. And that is really the start of it. And then there's another other characters include the Haymaker family, Jack Haymaker, who Honor ends up with. There's also Donovan, who is a slave hunter. And all of these characters have their various good and bad characteristics. And I think one of the important things for me in the book was to make sure that everybody had shades of gray in them, not just black, not just white, but shades of gray.
Now, in your research, you shared that black Quakers were expected to sit in a Negro pew in meeting houses, and that really surprised me.
Yeah, it surprised me, too. Quakers, the ideology of Quakers is that is the belief that there is a piece of God, or what they might call the inner light or the inner spirit, in every person. And because of that, all people are equal and should be treated thus, which means that you would think Quakers would be opposed to slavery. So two things surprised me. One is I discovered that some Quakers did have slaves in the 18th century. Eventually, in 1776, they stopped. But the other thing that really surprised me was this idea of, quote-unquote, the Negro pew, which apparently there were some black Quakers, and members, black Quakers could go to meeting, but they were not allowed to sit, at least in some meetings, not allowed to sit with white Quakers. They had their own bench. And I was really amazed by that, the sort of casualness with which that sort of prejudice was played out in what was supposedly an equal place, an equal setting. And when I found it out, I thought, you know, in a way, it really helps the novel because, as I said before, I don't want any of the characters to be all good or all bad. And the danger of writing about Quakers is that they just sound too good to be true. And indeed they were. And so that makes for a much more nuanced exploration of the issues of slavery, emancipation. When do you have a principle? When do you stand up for your principles? And when do you hold back?
Your book also shared some very difficult choices made by those who opposed slavery. In a way, they really had their hands tied to be openly supportive. Talk a little about that.
Well, I set the book in 1850, and that was a very specific reason, is that this legislation came into effect in August or September of 1850 called the Fugitive Slave Act, or Fugitive Slave Law. And it was a law that said basically, runaway slaves, if anyone helped them, they could be fined or imprisoned. And that had already been the case. But what was added with this particular act was that not only could you be fined, but you also had to, if a slave hunter or the owner of the slave came after them, this is in a northern state, came after them, if they needed help and they asked you for help, you had to help them out. And that really got on people's nerves. It was sort of, in some ways, the beginning of a real awakening amongst the public. Not just abolitionists had been working for years, but I think the general public was incensed by the idea that somebody could demand of them, you have to help me. And if they didn't, they could be fined or imprisoned. And having this in the background, you know, when a runaway slave appears in your farmyard, what do you do? And that's literally what this book is about. And for Honor, who's from England, she's always opposed slavery on principle, but principles it was one thing to live in England where there wasn't any slavery, but suddenly when it's actually applied there, and she wants to help the slave who appears in the farmyard, her family is not so keen on it because they're afraid of being fined and they're afraid of being imprisoned. And they were huge fines, $1,000. I mean, you could ruin your farm if you had to pay that fine. And so the book explores this idea of it's not always so easy to put into practice the principles that you may hold.
Right. Actually, how much research did you do before you put pen to paper?
It's hard to quantify because I researched all the way through. In fact, the book is out, and I still feel like there are books that I should be reading and maps I should be looking at. I probably did 3 or 4 months of research before I started put pen to paper. But the thing is, the moment you put pen to paper, you realize, oh, I need to find out about this. I want one of my characters, an African American woman named Mrs. Reed, who lives in Overland. She, who works on the Underground Railroad, her hat is trimmed with wildflowers. And I thought, oh, they're not the same wildflowers there as here. So I have to find out what would have been, you know, it's July or it's February. What could she have put on her hat? And And so it's funny little things like that. So you might start the general research and get a good idea of Ohio, the Underground Railroad, the Quakers, all of these notions. But then when you get to the specifics, you have to almost do the research all over again.
And do you actually go on location while you're writing a book to get the feel of the place?
Of course. I've heard there are writers who write a book without ever visiting the place, but I am not one of those writers. I couldn't imagine not doing that. So I went to Ohio several times. Luckily, I went to Oberlin College as an English major in the 80s, and I still have friends there. Some of my old professors are now my friends, which is wonderful. And I go and stayed with them, and I drove around the back roads. I got out and sniffed the air. I tried to describe it. I looked at the sunshine. I took photos. I looked at all those wildflowers. I walked through virgin forests. I visited an Amish farm to see how a 19th century style farm would be run. And all of that really goes into the pot.
So are you already at work on a new project?
Yes, I'm not as far into it as I'd like to be, but I do have a new project in mind. I've been toying with the idea of not writing a purely historical novel, and I think that's scared me. But all I'm going to say is that the book is going to involve trees, and it will probably take place in a couple of different countries.
Readers, The Last Runaway is a great historical novel. I think you'll love it. Tracy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Alrighty, bye.
Okay, thanks, bye.